And you're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It is good to have you with us tonight. It's bound to be a barn burner here in the studio, so you're going to be jazzed that you stop by. And so we're going to kick off the show directly with a good friend of ours, Ted Yoder. Ted, are you still there?
I am here.
Awesome. Well, so we're keeping Ted up. So here's what we're going to do. the reason you've heard Ted on the show before, he was in the studio a few months back and did a fantastic job, and was a lot of fun. And I Mike, I don't know when you saw this, but I was maybe towards the beginning of the week. I was just hunting on Facebook, and all of a sudden, like, somebody shares Sweet Ted on their Hammer Dulcimer and doing the Hammer Dulcimer stuff. And so I was real excited for it, and I saw it, and it was a massive number of views at the time. It was like, 800,000 or something like that. And so I thought, hey, man, that's really cool. You know, that's going to be awesome. I bet Ted's pretty excited about that. And so I kind of reached out and said, you know, hey, congrats, Ted. And then Mike gets a hold of me maybe a day later and said, hey, man, did you see Ted's blowing up on the net? He's blowing up everywhere.
Yeah, I actually had the exact same reaction. I'm like, man, way to go, Ted. That's pretty cool. And then I looked at the number today, and I'm like, this is getting outrageous.
It's getting out of hand is what happened.
Like, where are these people coming from?
So Ted,
I don't know.
So tell me a little bit about this. Like, how does it feel to be the 54 or 58 million hit man?
Surprisingly, kind of just like a father of seven. CBS hasn't called or Good Morning America hasn't called yet or anything like that. So I'm just kind of like, well, hey, business as usual, I guess, you know. we have a bunch of CD orders to fill, which is fantastic.
Awesome.
I don't know. Who knows? Maybe my iTunes my iTunes check might be a little bit louder this time around. But
No, that's true.
I don't know. It's pretty incredible.
Here's the thing. This is the thing that just amazes me. It's like, it was, first of all, the recording, it was really good. And it just seems to, people are just loving it. They're absolutely loving it. Like they haven't heard anything like it before. And I'm like, the weird part is when you were in here, we talked about this a little bit, but I'm like, People look at the dulcimer and they're kind of like, I don't know what to do with this thing. We talked about it being background for loon music most of the time, you know?
Right, yes.
And then,
yes.
It gets some exposure, and, like, it did exactly what I thought it would do. It's like, if people could just hear it, like, they would get it. And, like, that is exactly what happened. And it's really blowing up, and it's awesome.
I think the most amazing thing is, yes, the amount of people that are just, like you said, in love with it. But there's also a tremendous lack of angst toward it.
Right.
I happened upon some Reddit, you know, comments that were rather scathing and whatever. But, you know, they were probably like 16, 22 year old kids living in their basement still or whatever. And but other than that, I mean, people have just, yeah, I, you know, man, it's just. I don't know. I'm all mushy and gooey because of it. I don't know how else to put it.
I that's understandable, Ted. Like, and I get, like, at a certain point, you know, like, a million people doesn't feel all that different than, like, 50 million people from your end. But, like, it's just,
right.
it's a crazy thing because, like, you know that the medium that you're dealing in has the potential to do that, but still, like, the still aghast surprise that it actually happened.
I know. I think the longer that I go, the longer that time kind of moves on, I don't know. People call it a big break, and yet all I did was I just went to work as usual, you know. I just did what I've been doing for 6 years. I went in my backyard with my family and played my dulcimer for whoever wanted to show up. Well, this time, 54 million people showed up. So it was like, oh, hey, how you doing?
Hey, Ted, can I pet the raccoon?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yes, absolutely, you can. She doesn't hang around all the time, but she comes and goes. I don't know if you guys caught it, but there was like this whole thing on Twitter where Kurt Smith, you know, the lead singer for Tears for Fears, he tweeted the video, and then at the end of it, he said, "All I'd want to do is pet the coon." That's what he said. Yeah. So
hey, man,
I told him to come over anytime.
Hey, I was gonna say, you know, he watched the whole thing. That's awesome.
Yeah, he did. And actually, I think. Thursday night after I had put it up, I put it up on Wednesday, you know, and then Thursday night, I think I got an email from the drummer, Jamie Woolman, of Tears for Fears. Woolum. I said that wrong. Woolum, yes.
That is crazy. That is absolutely crazy. And here's the thing is that's why I love that story is because it is just Ted Yoder being Ted Yoder and more people happen to catch it, right?
Yeah.
Like there's no better way to have your stuff be seen and interpreted and discovered when it's just like, I didn't go out of my way to do anything crazy. This is just kind of what I do and I'm glad you appreciate it.
Yeah. It's just amazing. I'm surprised I'm not crying, but maybe I'm all out of tears right now. I'm pretty speechless.
Well, we just wanted to make sure that I'm really glad that you took some time to talk to us, and really, congratulations, man. You deserve it. It was awesome. And we'll let you go and get back to your Yoder-style family jazz, but congratulations. It was very cool.
Thanks, guys. Have a great night.
See you, Ted.
Bye.
Hey, so that's Ted Yoder. And
yeah.
If you have not checked this out yet, you can do a quick search on Facebook for Ted Yoder, spelled exactly as it sounds. No double D, double Y, nothing crazy, just Ted Yoder. and you'll check it out, and it's a cover of the Tears for Fears tune, and it's just really, really good.
Did you watch it, Booba?
Absolutely. Yeah. I saw it. I didn't get a chance to see him in studio when he first came in. Like I wasn't here for that. I don't know where I was, but I was somewhere off and doing something probably foolish. So you guys have always talked about the Dulcimer. I've never had a chance to actually look at it. And so when I saw the video, I immediately hopped on there and I showed probably 15 people within the first like 3 minutes of watching it.
Yeah.
Because it's something that like those instruments that are something that's not a mainstream instrument that's played, obviously. You know, you've got the usuals. That is completely far off from that. And so having such a weird contraption being played, and then especially my generation, not barely knowing anything about music, like, it's so cool. My friends all looked at it, were all astonished by it, and they loved it. Absolutely loved it. So
I love the click part. You know, like, doom,
yeah.
Doom, the click. And I'm like, what, he added the click? Do all dulcimers have this sweet click bar?
I don't know, but it looked like it had that little thing on the end. He was able to just tap it real quick and make it happen. It was perfect.
It makes the whole tune.
I thought it was amazing, yeah.
Anyway.
I kind of wanted him to sing, to be blatantly honest with you. Like, I was kind of waiting for him to kind of just, like, jam in, but, like, eh. It was still an amazing video.
Yeah, so you can check out all of Ted's stuff at his website. He's got stuff on iTunes. It is well worth downloading, giving a check out. And on top of that, he's just a straight up cool dude.
Yeah.
And so go ahead and you know, put the Google on Ted Yoder and take in all you can. There's still some time left in the night. Don't bail on it too early.
Yeah, man. There's something about a dude that's like living in a house and taking care of his kids and loving on his kids and stuff like that. Walking out to his backyard playing a sweet thing, and then 54 million people going, well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if someone showed up and took
or 58 million.
I took a video of me mowing the lawn and stuff, and I'm like, hey, man, I can't be appreciated for the regular stuff.
I've seen you mow your lawn. It's unimpressive. It's okay, man. Like, it's just, it's not that cool. It's not 58 million views worth.
No, definitely not.
It's Enoching. He's Enoching it.
He's totally Enoching it.
Yeah.
Walking with the Lord, playing the hammered dulcimer.
That's yep. Right.
Says, I do what I do. That's what it's going to burn out.
Hey, man, you guys want to come to my backyard and be Enoch?
I like it. All right, you're listening live from the Path. Here's what we got on the show tonight. So we've talked to Ted Yoder. Make sure you check that clip out. You could go to Facebook. He's also got it on YouTube. Here's the thing. I think he's done it before. Like he's got plenty of these tunes out there. It just like takes the right moment to kind of catch it and let it fly. So we also, Booba has some potential double barrel Pope style. At least one Pope style, maybe two barrels.
Yep.
Still thinking it through, though.
I think we're going to hit both barrels.
Okay. Potentially double barrel Pope style. Mike, what do you have on the docket tonight?
There's some Dear Life from the Path coming up. There's a lady is concerned that she has anxiety about filtering out bad news for people. And so, we'll talk about that a little bit. There's some actual substance probably there and maybe a little bit of ridiculousness
right.
That we can go through.
Right.
And also, I don't really have Pope style, but I've had a pretty sweet experience with God this week, and we'll touch on that.
Okay. Cool. I saw this article, and it was kind of funny. There is the Lutheran Church in Norway wanted to organize their records, right? So, like, they want to kind of digitize them, get everything in order. And so they... and the Lutheran Church is the official religion of Norway, and they put up a webpage last Monday that allows people to verify their status, to say, hey, we're in the church or we're not in the church, okay? So as of last Friday, the thing was only open for like 5 days, 15,000 people got online and left the church.
Wow. Wow.
15,000 people.
That's a massive movement.
And like, what's interesting is, like, that's obviously not everyone who's left the church, right? These are the people who are concerned enough to go check out the webpage and deregister.
That's true. Usually if they put up some kind of warning like that, you know, most people look at it and go, eh. You know, is it even worth my 2 minutes to get on there and say that I'm out? I would just have left it be.
Right. They were passionate enough to go and actually make the action happen.
So here's what I loved about this. I mean, I'm not sure I understand the process, and I think maybe we've kind of reduced our understanding of church membership when we're publicizing the rules so that people can say in and out. Like, I'm not sure that's exactly what we're trying to get at with the church membership. But I thought actually the church's answer was funny. They said, we will continue to have a broad and open national church, but no one should be a member of a religious community against their will, and therefore I am glad that this self-solution is in place. Those who mistakenly listed as a member of the Norwegian church or who do not wish to be members can now easily change their status, and will give us a more accurate registry.
I mean, that's pretty honest, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is, but I'm totally imagining Jesus up on the mount and talking to these people, giving a sweet sermon. And then all the disciples walking around with clipboards that say yes or no, and then everybody has to go, oh, yeah, I'm in. Yeah. No, I'm good.
I don't know.
The
I'm
kingdom is at hand. Yeah, I'll take it.
I'm still on the fence about this thing. Put me down as a maybe. Do you guys have a maybe?
Can you email me later and we can talk about it?
How about your cousin Bob? I hear he deregistered. Online.
Right. Is the next part of this, like, they're going to go out and do a giant Lutheran movement throughout Norway and walk up to people's houses? So we noticed that you left the church on the Evite there, so we're gonna need to talk to you about Jesus and see if we can get you back.
You know, it's a way more honest way of living, though, right? Like, wouldn't you rather know? You know, companies do this all the time. They're like, hey, we lost money here. We'll shift it a little bit over here so it doesn't look as bad. This account looks all right. Now it's both 50-50. And, like, what a dishonest way of doing things. And the church, it sounds like the church was kind of in that same condition. You know, they're like, man, we got, like, 30,000 people going here. Truth of the matter is, you have, like, 2,000. And you just wrote, it's just like the who's the people that write you down just when they talk to you? That go door to door?
Oh, the Mormons do that, yeah.
The Mormons, right? As soon as they talk to you, they're like, Mormon. That guy's Mormon.
He's a Mormon.
We talked to him about Mormonism. There's no way he's not going to eventually decide to be Mormon. So
he's on the path.
We plant seeds, and those produce plants automatically, so we might as well just count it as a seed.
Yeah, send him the lighthouse.
No, it's not the lighthouse.
Watchtower.
Watchtower.
Send him the watchtower.
Yeah.
Lighthouse is a bit better. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Like, man, you think there's some secondary Mormon church that's talking about the lighthouse instead of the watchtower? Hey, they're bringing just a different building?
So, is there a tie to the watchtower that I don't understand? Because it seems to me like I would rather say a lighthouse than be like, you know, this is where you come to safety. This is the thing that guides you through your life. That makes more sense for a relevant metaphor to Jesus opposed to the watchtower.
Yeah. Hey, there's danger coming.
It sounds like he's going to snipe you from the third balcony. Yeah, I'd go with the lighthouse.
Perhaps he is. Okay. Anyway, I kind of like that. I just, there's something sad about that too. Like, if you're not part of the church, you might as well not be on the rolls. I get that part. But like, our understanding as, a part of a community of Jesus followers as, well, I deregistered today. I'm no longer on the list. We just might need to rethink the understanding of someone who thought on the list was a qualification to begin with.
No, that's true. Do you think that was a big, like, sigh of relief? Like, whoo, good, I'm glad I'm out of there. Like, I mean, it's not like they come after you or, I mean, what's the worst they're going to do? Send you emails and stuff? Or like, hit you up onto Facebook? I mean, what's the worst thing that they're doing?
You know, it had to have been a public database, though. So, like, I bet people were trying to flee from it so that other people couldn't check them out. It's like that, like the treasure hunts that the assessors do. Right, where the people leave property behind and, like, you go to search. Like, you search everybody you know to see if they got money outstanding. You guys not done that?
No, I've done it.
What I'm saying. So now let's say, hey, there's a public database available of which you can find out who's in the church. Like, I just start randomly typing folks in just to check out, see who's there.
Hey, man, that guy's still Lutheran? Yep.
Yeah. Hey, we still got Denzel?
We still got him.
He's still in.
He's a Lutheran in Norway. That's the deal. That's why we can't get a grasp on it.
Is Denzel still a Norwegian Lutheran.com?
That would be the hardest thing, though, is like if you're the guy on the other end of the computer, I'm like, no, we lost Denzel.
Oh, man. You had one job, man. It was keeping Denzel.
Crap.
Probably the name is Denzel Oslo there.
That's not right.
Denzel Oslo?
No, what's the capital of Norway?
No, Oslo's Norway.
Yes. that joke was not good, but I got it right.
Yeah, it was factually correct. It just wasn't funny.
When you're talking about a pompous man that named himself after the capital of Norway.
Hi, I'm Denzel Norway.
That's like being like, hey, I'm Bob Washington, D.C. Yeah, no, you're not.
All right, so anyway, if you haven't done this, and maybe you were on the rolls when you were a kid before you migrated here, go hook. I don't know what the website is. They didn't post it. Maybe they didn't want people creeping on it. But you may need to consider deregistering yourself at the Norwegian Lutheran whatever. Just Google it. I'm sure it's available.
I kind of want to go register for it.
Yeah,
like, I want to go hop into the Norwegian Lutheran category just so they go, hey, man, we lost 15,000, but there's one dude in Iowa, like in America, yeah, apparently he's in.
Picked one up.
Lost 15,000, got one Randall.
We lost Denzel, got us a mover.
Yeah, then you see Randall celebrating. They're like, my PR campaign is really rocking. Way to go, Randall.
We lost Denzel, but we got another.
Everyone said this site was going to be a disaster. Who's laughing now?
That's right. We shouldn't spend $35 on flyers. Boover from Iowa's joined.
You think they validate Boover? You think they'll send
me a letter.
Yeah. Dear Booba, are you really a Norwegian Lutheran?
Dear Mr. Booba, did you mean to click yes and register the Norwegian church? Yes, I did.
Because we've had a real mass of people leave, and we suspect you did this in error.
We're really kind of hanging on by every one person we can keep, so this will really validate us as a denomination if you say yes.
What are those things that they put over the robes that like they're like have the crosses on them? They kind of hang down. It's like a scarf or a sash. Is a sash have to go like 45 degrees across your chest? Or you know what I'm saying? Like, it's this thing that goes over your neck and, like, it's like a double tie.
The draperies.
Yeah. Is that what it's called? A drapery?
No, I don't think so.
Hey, man, I still don't know the difference between different types of jackets.
The shoulder curtains.
Shoulder curtains?
Like, yeah. Well,
if that's not what it's called, that's what it needs to be called.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. So, what's the question, though, Mike?
What are those called?
I don't know.
Shoulder curtains.
And B, they should give them to you when you join the Church of Norway.
I get the official colors of the Lutheran Church of Norway's shoulder curtains.
Yeah. I think you have to earn those.
I rock that every day.
Oh.
Hey, actually, I saw a friend of mine on Facebook who's a pastor, something in the Lutheran Church.
Yeah.
And he was wearing those.
He has the shoulder curtains?
And they were sparkling white in this picture. And I thought, I could never be a guy... like a Lutheran guy who has to wear that stuff. Because, like, I mean, certainly, think of all the opportunities over a 10-year pastor career where you don't have those in the wash or something, or you spilled soda on it.
Yeah. That's the
or
truth.
Something.
One and, like, church potluck, you got meatball on it.
Yeah. Like, I just couldn't. I mean, I'd always be putting it somewhere. It'd be wrinkled. We'd have tied it to the dog for some reason. We'd have mopped up something with it. And, like, you know that, like, you think that you would never do this, but certainly one Sunday I would show up and have a big old, you know, mustard on it or something.
Do you think the elders of the church would come and talk to you specifically? It's like, Pastor Ben, we've been needing to talk to you about your shoulder curtains.
Yeah.
We did notice that there was some imperfections on them.
We see that there's mustard on your frock.
There's been 6 trips to the dry cleaner on that thing. It's not a sheet, man. You know what I'm saying? Just... treat it appropriately. Like,
you don't need to wash it on the daily. Just keep it clean.
Get a bib and some OxyClean.
This is why I always
put on the Lord's work here.
I always appreciated the guys that wore the same outfit as the choir people. You know what I'm saying? Like, he knows the deal, because if you get that one messed up, you just go pick up an extra one. You know somebody's sick in the choir. You just grab the other robe out and you're set.
You put on Sickie's robe?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
you're right.
Why
there's
always one kid sick on the choir. They pass around the robes.
All right, you're listening live from the path. Here's what you've done in life. You've made a mistake, and likely with a group of people, because you've mistaken Booba as if he is the Pope.
Oh, buddy.
And I would hope that the start of the program would dissuade you from this, but your stubbornness has continued to permeate life. And so, along with everyone else, your expectation is that Pope Booba is going to give you some sort of worldly advice or wisdom that will otherwise improve your life. Otherwise, you won't leave his lawn. Which is where you and your friends have congregated in anticipation of said advice, like in at the Vatican. So anyway, Pope Booba, you have to give them something to get them to leave your lawn. What saith you?
Oh, man. I can't agree more with the fact they made bad choices here. But I'm going to preface this by saying that, now, I don't believe this is God directly, but like life and God working through that and allowing things to go down has kind of crushed me. In the last couple weeks. And I can't... I'm not trying to be dramatic by saying that. I'm just being honest. Like, there's a certain level of boobiness that I like to be at that God kind of just called me out and said, yeah, that ain't happening anymore. And so, let's start off with that. So here's my broad advice to you You are not impressive by any means. And I mean that from the perspective of you equals everyone.
By no means at all.
By no means at all are you impressive.
Man, there is, are you impressive? By no means.
There's legitimately nothing that you can tell me after I ask, hey, man, what have you been up to? That you can literally tell me, and I will go, man, that is crazy impressive, and you are much better than God because of it, right? So I say that because there's a certain level of pride destruction that's happened within the last couple of weeks. It's been rough. So going from having a job and having income to be able to kind of take care of myself and then help out with, like, not a whole lot, but like other people as much as I can, right? To legitimately not having any money to pay for anything and kind of having to tail up and walk up to God's people and go, hey, I can't afford anything. And like, I haven't eaten in a day. So if you got food, like, I'll take it. Or if you want to, like, invite me to your house and pretend like I'm not really hungry right now, and then, like, I'll eat there like it's just a normal meal, not like the first one I've had in a day and a half, we could do that. But God kind of allows that to happen right now. And so, man, I walked into this whole ordeal because I'm a full-time student now, and walked into college thinking that, A, you know, I'm really sweet for doing this. And like, man, people should look up to me because I'm an adult going back to school and I'm going to kick butt at this and I'm going to be the smartest kid in all my classes and stuff like that. I could not have been more wrong about that, first off. Second off, thinking that that I wasn't going to have to swallow every bit of my pride and realize that legitimately the only reason that I'm alive right now, sincerely, is because God has completely orchestrated that to happen. Through his people, through random stuff happening to where I literally had a dollar, at one point in time, 37 cents in my account and no food. And then money kind of showed up through God's people and through God. And it was literally life-saving and I had no idea what I was going to do. and so this kind of all leads back to, you don't have to go through something that drastic. And there's much more drastic ways to go through that, by the way. Like there are people that have gone through much harder stuff than I have. I just kind of was able to flip it on a little bit faster than I've heard of before. But like, you got to realize you are not impressive in any way. Like you legitimately exist because of God entirely, regardless of if you call him your father or whatever. You really do. Like he breathed life into you. And if you believe in him or not, that's the truth. He has orchestrated it all to happen. You have a job because of him. You have money because of him and food because of him and all this different stuff. Regardless of what you want to say, it has nothing to do with how impressive you are. As a man, as a woman, as anything. You are not the reason you are living. You aren't. If you have pride in what you do, great to an extent. If you're excited about how well you do in life, great to an extent. But you have to realize that is not because of what you've done and because of how great you are. It took a small amount of nudging from God for me to really step back and shut my mouth. And I can't say that more disrespectfully towards myself. And I mean it. You know, I had pride and I had all this stuff where I thought that I was going to be the one that fixed all this and I didn't run to God for it. But he kind of shut me up quick and made me realize that it has nothing to do with how well I was able to take care of myself or what skills I had. Or what scenario I could put myself in. It literally came down to him completely taking care of me. And is still doing so. Like, I'm not out of that. Like, that's still going on to where the only reason I have food right now is God. And the only reason I have anything going on right now is because God's got it taken care of. And it's really hit me hard because I am a prideful beast that considers myself impressive. And within the last couple of weeks, month, two, God has reminded me, and not from an unloving perspective, but from a very loving perspective, that I am not in any way impressive. I'm not special in that way. I am one of his children and his son that he loves, that he's going to take care of. That hurt to handle. It felt great because, like, it's a really cool deal to be able to, you know, start to comprehend that you're one of his kids and, like, he loves you entirely. And is going to take care of you. But, like, there's a certain level of, man, am I in any way a capable or competent man to be able to handle my own business? if I can't even handle my own bills, if I can't even figure out how to eat today. Yeah. And it's been this weird deal back and forth where prideful Buva that serves himself goes, you know, this is all because some cool stuff's happened that you did, and you know, you shouldn't feel bad. You're a man. You got this taken care of. And then that gets beat down and deadened by the fact that I know it was God entirely. That's taken care of that, and is still taking care of that. And I'm so thankful for that, but it's just, man, like, you have to take a step back when, like, legitimately you have to drive out of your way to go get some cash from somebody, and you have to look them in the face, and they just kind of take care of you, and know it's okay, and try and have pride. It's impossible.
Right. No, and I think that's it's something that perhaps, like, if we haven't run into, it probably begs the question as to whether this is something that we are blindly struggling with, right? Because to the extent that if you've not been humbled by having to reassess your identity back in Jesus, as opposed to I'm able to provide for myself or somebody else, I am able to care for myself or somebody else, contributing to society in this way or that way or whatever. Like, someone couldn't look at me and say the following, you know, like, degrading things about how my life contributes to the betterment of the world and have it not be true, right? Like, but the things that you're talking about, if you've ever had to be like, hey, I'm not sure I can't provide for myself right now. In this moment, right. I'm not capable of changing my own situation and providing for myself. At this moment, I'm not able to positively influence somebody else's life in the same way that I can't contribute positive to myself, right? And so what it does is it forces an identity shift. It forces us to say, okay, so if then who actually am I? If I'm not this, if I can't provide for myself in this way at this time, if I can't provide for somebody else, these are things that unintentionally we lock our identity up into. And say, well, this is who I am. I'm the guy who helps people. I'm the guy who is always in a great mood and is kind of the life of the party. I'm the guy, you know, who is always there. And, like, you know what? Right now, I can't put gas in my vehicle to come over and help you. I'm hungry myself, and I have to ask someone to help me out. Right. And, like, these are there's two great things to learn from that. What the first one is what you were talking about, right? Is like, it forces you to kind of to be humbled in a way that says, like, where I thought I was leaning on God, no, I'm not, but now I am,
right?
And the second part is to recognize the where other people are at in that same regard, right? Like, how often have we, you know, like, when we say, hey, man, I'm feeling low or I'm kind of feeling in the dumps, like, we've not been in the place where we have to kind of reassess who we actually are. Because we have a lot more tied up in, like if someone says, hey, man, what do? They're generally asking you, where do you work?
Yeah.
Right? And so you don't have a job. Look at this. You can't adequately answer the what do in a way that isn't going to be, like, embarrassing to somebody. What do? Scratch knees? You know, make Totino's pizza rolls? Like, whatever it is.
I make sure my phone is charged.
I do a great job with
it. And, like, right, so, like, there's an identity that people expect about your job. Right. And so if you're not working, and here's the thing, there's reasons to not work. Some are, you know, you're not capable of working. Sometimes you're doing things that are alternative to working that are positive. Sometimes you're not. Sometimes you're just dodging work. But in either case, no answer that's, I don't have a job right now, comes across as good. And there's an identity kind of tied up in what you do. There's identity tied up in how you provide for yourself or how you provide for others. And so, like, when we start stripping away the way that the world kind of provides identity and value, we have to reassess, like, no, really, when God says, here's what I value, here's where your identity is, it forces you back to that. And if without that, I don't know how you find joy, because the world's identity is crushing. Use your phrase, Boob. It's like, it will crush you if you don't meet the standard that we otherwise expect people to have. And that's why it's so easy to dismiss people who are in a lifestyle or who are in a time of life where you're like, hey, man, that guy's not working. Like, no one takes that in a positive way. No one, like, hey, he doesn't have a job right now. Like, they have to say right now, because they're leading to, like, maybe he's looking for a job, or maybe he just left a job, or maybe he's got three applications out. Like, because you are not meeting our societal expectation right at this moment, and, like, you better get up there, and it will crush someone who's on the other side of that. And like a lot of times when we're dealing with people, like we just we kind of ignore that part. So I think there's two lessons. There's a humility thing that is good. It causes you to redefine your identity, but it should also kind of change how you look at the world and people that are in it who have been in those circumstances and through whatever societal barriers may exist. Like maybe we have institutional things that make it difficult for a guy who doesn't have a home to get a job because he doesn't have an address and he can't get a shower and he doesn't have the right shoes and like whatever the circumstance is that like we've got some barriers to those things that otherwise, you know, kind of perpetuate this. Boy, is he three applications out, or is he just lose his job? What's the deal? Why doesn't he have work? Why is he not satisfying my expectation for his life?
Yeah, fair enough.
All right. So what's the advice, though, Booba?
Well, so the advice is A, recognize, yeah, you're not impressive. Seriously. B, the thing you can do from that is if you're in a place where that is a crushing statement, like we've been talking about. You need to redefine your identity, and seriously find who you are in God's eyes. If you are basing your identity off how you are worldly and how impressive you are, and we've just defined that you are not, you need to find that you are a loved, child of God that was created in His image and is loved beyond measure and has been sacrificed for and is taken care of in such a way that you will never even be able to either pay back or imagine the bounds of what God has done for you. Realize that you can feel okay knowing that identity. It's tough to not be impressive societally, but it's better when you realize that that doesn't matter. And what does matter is God's view of you, not humans, not societies. It's what God looks at you and sees. And that's His child.
Being a coward! A fool! Being like your father, Adam! Who do you think you are?
Oh, buddy.
You are not God! You are just a man!
Oh, buddy.
You're not an impressive man! You're not a responsible man! You're not a noble man! You're not a respectable man. You're not a responsible man.
All right. There's nothing like getting screamed at by Mark Driscoll
when his
friggin' ginormous trap veins are popping out of his head.
I couldn't think of anything else when you said you're not an impressive man.
That's understandable. Right. Hey, yes. Man, I watch that constantly. I used to watch that constantly where I'm like, hey, man, I need to redefine myself as I need to be screamed at by Mark Driscoll.
Here's the thing is people always, I mean, sometimes it's just flat out helpful.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like when you, not a guy that's just angry at you, but like he's angry for the right reasons. You're like, right. Man, I'm wrong. Yeah. And this guy is right.
He
and
sees entirely through everything you're trying to put out into the world and just looks you in the face and goes, you suck. Yeah. You flat out suck.
You know what? You know what? And that's, you know, here's the deal. Sometimes you just need to get used to that.
Yeah.
Right? Like sometimes totally. The truth of the matter is you do suck. Right? Instead of
most
fighting.
Most of the time that's the matter.
You're sitting there swinging your fists is like, how dare you say I suck? Instead of going, you know what? I think he's right.
Yeah.
I think I might actually totally suck. I got some real things that I could change, you know? I could really make a difference in a ten of different places, one in my own life, in people surrounding me, but I'm too busy being mad because someone said I suck instead of going, I should change those things,
yeah.
And then start not sucking, and then things will be good. Man.
Oh, man. Let's go.
Yeah. Here's the thing: is like that guy. He's taking a lot of heat on that particular thing, and like the winds have kind of shifted. Where it's like, oh yeah, that was awesome. And then like 3 years later, they're like, he's a bully.
Whatever.
Here's the thing: is like that's not the entire context on how to be a man. All right, but it's a piece of it.
Yeah, it's definitely.
I'm okay with that being a piece of it. I think it needs to sit in some realm or another that says, look, fellas. Pull yourselves together. You're kind of getting away with his jackassery, and like someone needs to say something about it. And this is you're not listening to anybody else. So you know what it's a piece.
Yeah,
I'm all right with it.
All right,
okay.
It was funny. Booba was talking about that stuff, and that's kind of it's a little bit of the encounter that I had. I don't know that I had with God this week. I was I just had one of those weeks where I felt like I was screwing everything up. You know, like everything that I had to do with, I was not doing it right. I was not loving my kids right. I was not loving my wife right. I was acting like a fool at work, and like I just everything I was doing, and it was just beating the snot out of me. And I knew it, right? I knew it. I was driving up from, I was driving back from a place that I had to work, and I'm like, and I was praying. I'm like, God, I don't know what is going on, but my perspective has got to change. Like whatever is going on with me, I'm screwing everything up, and I do not know why. And so I prayed most of the drive home. It was a fairly long drive, you know, and I kind of got home and there was nobody at my house, and I sat down to watch a movie. You guys ever seen that movie, what is it, Family Man with Nicolas Cage?
Yes.
Oh, man, yeah, I like that movie.
Yeah. So I'm sitting there watching this thing, you know, and all of a sudden, like this weird feeling keeps hitting me in the face, you know. It's like, hey, man, you need to pay attention to this. I'm like, well, I am, you know, I'm watching a movie. You know, I feel like I'm paying attention, you know. And, like, it wasn't a half hour into it, I'm crying. Like, I'm just sitting by myself crying. And I'm like, why am I even crying? I'm not some kind of sweet stockbroker to make big money. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I'm just sitting here watching it, and like, I'm watching this dude with his priorities completely focused on something, 1,000 miles away that has no actual long-term meaning, that has actual no ability to give back to him. You know, like it's a straw man of what you're pointing your life to. You know, and I'm like, it's just a movie, you know. But I'm sitting there, I'm like, this is exactly what's going on with me, right? This is exactly what I'm doing. I'm focusing on weird things. I'm getting upset at little things. And like, I probably cried for 15 minutes, you know, not like full out sobbing, but like, you know, I'd sit there for a minute and all of a sudden I couldn't see very well again. I'm like, what is going on? And then I figured it out, right? Like, and so I closed my eyes and I said, you know, sometimes you could just ease me into it. You know, but this is exactly what I wanted. And I fought to get back to the ugly perspective I had before I started watching this stupid movie. And I couldn't get it. Like, it was just gone. It was just gone. And, like, I could not have been any happier to see my wife and my kids and that stupid dog that puts hair everywhere. You know what I'm saying? And the mess that they all make. And, like, and work called, like, 3 times. And I'm like, I don't care. I don't care. I really don't. Like, I just truly, it's not important to me right now. I have other stuff to do. And, like, it was the most freeing experience that I had. And I had stopped the movie. And I'm like, Lord, this movie ain't that good. You know, it's a good movie, but I don't know that it's a bring a guy to tears kind of deal.
Nick Cage strikes again.
You know, and I'm like, I've been asking for this for the last 2 days, and like, I couldn't take anymore. And like, he waited until the right time, and he just, man, it was just so weird. He took it all away, and I couldn't imagine going back to it. And I'm like, I don't know exactly what I had to learn through this, but like, I'm thankful for the relief, and I know it came from you, and that's enough. And that's enough for me right now, you know? And so, like, it was just really weird. I haven't had one of those experiences in a while where I had just been fervently praying for something. Like, I just cannot handle this. And I think it had a lot to do with just exactly what you're talking about. Like, putting stuff on my shoulders and saying, I will handle this under my own steam. And everything will be fine. And I've got this. And I'm driving this truck. And this is the deal. And really, after a while, it's just like, you know, you're screwing it up because you're not letting me do any of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've designed this thing, and I call you my son, and you come in here like you own the joint and try to move furniture around and say, here's how it's going to be, you know? I just feel like he had to let that weight sit on me for a while until I got it. And when I did, he took it off me and let me see what it could be like if I let him do some stuff. And so it was just a very cool experience. I don't even know that I have any advice or to say, hey, you should do the same thing. Cause I mean, I don't know what God's doing with you. But I just know it was a very clear evidence of something that I had prayed for and God answering. And like, I've seen that Family Man movie like 5 times. You know what I'm saying? I don't weep during Family Man.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I appreciate it for being a pretty decent movie, but like, on the whole, I don't break down to tears. And so I don't know. It was a pretty good deal. And to be honest with you, I haven't been able to shake that since then. Like, we're rolling on 4 days since that happened, and I'm like, yeah, I just see things way differently than I was last week, and like, I have nothing but God to thank for that.
Right on.
Yeah.
Bubba, did you have did you get that other barrel loaded, or what do you think?
Yeah, I have the other barrel loaded.
Okay, let's have it.
The easy way to put it is, things you think of and things you do are not more powerful to show God's love than just straight up God's love. So I say that because I've run into a couple situations last week where I was able to kind of help a couple of people in different ways, whatever. Like, whether it be a random conversation where someone just weirdly opens up and then needs to talk about like a lot of heavy stuff that they've been dealing with. Like, I had no previous relationship with this person. They just kind of wanted to go, hey, you're a human, and I'd like to tell you about everything right now. or running into to a situation where he was able to spend, you know, like 12 hours with a random dude. And I say this because the funny thing was, I didn't sit there and try and figure out, well, how can I sneak Jesus into this conversation? You know, like how can I bring God into this to where I can bring these people to God? And it wasn't some weird deal where I'm just thinking through scripture and like, you know, hey, if I drop that on them, like, hey man, let's talk about John 3:16, and then they will definitely be Christians going forward, right? It was more along the lines of, hey, this person is dealing with realistic stuff and like real world problems that was just hurting them and seriously like bringing them down. And so I guess my advice is, you know, a lot of the times we prepare for conversations and we spend a lot of time learning about discipleship from the perspective of, if somebody says this, tell them this. Or, you know, if someone's dealing with this, here's a great scripture that you can drop on them and make sure that they know what this is. And then always be certain to mention Jesus in this light and make sure that they know that, you know, he's their savior and all this different stuff. And I'm not saying there's not worth to that, because there definitely is in certain scenarios. But sometimes we complicate that deal way too much. And we make discipleship into something that it's not. It doesn't have to be this weird corporate transaction between you and another human being to where you've said the buzzwords, and therefore you've planted the seeds and God's going to run with that. God definitely does work through that, but there's a certain amount of power to just being a human being and just allowing God's love to do something rather than just, you know, words that mean something to you that may mean absolutely nothing to somebody else. And so there's nothing wrong with preparing, and there's nothing wrong with reading your Bible. Do it always. You know, memorize verses. It's a great deal. Learn better ways to talk about Jesus, whatever. That's awesome. But realize that there's a certain human aspect to doing it that is super powerful when you just walk up to someone and go, hey, it sounds like you're in a really sucky situation right now, and I'm just going to listen. And then, you know, if you want to talk afterwards, we can talk afterwards. Or if that's all you needed, that's all you needed. You know, you don't have to give somebody a Bible every time you buy them a lunch. It doesn't necessarily have to roll that way. If you do, great, but it doesn't have to roll that way. So my advice for you is, realize that God may just call you to kind of just love on somebody. It doesn't necessarily have to be a conversation about, the Gospel of Luke. It doesn't necessarily have to be, hey, do you know about Jesus' crucifixion? That's a great deal, but like sometimes it's just, hey man, do you need a sandwich?
Yeah, like sometimes I think you're right. It does feel like a transaction, and although it's not implicitly wrong, I think we have some assumptions on people will meet Jesus as an academic, right?
Right.
Like when we say true things, like hey, we want people to know the truth about Jesus. Sometimes our understanding of communicating truth is something to the extent of, we want to communicate facts about Jesus.
Right.
Right? As opposed to, if even a tenth of the people that claim to follow Jesus Christ actually did what Jesus did, the very change in the world would be so substantial that you wouldn't be able to handle it well. Right? Like, you wouldn't have to, we wouldn't be reaching for brochures and facts all the time, because they simply would see things going on. And, like, the actions themselves would be a testament to the validity of what Scripture is. So, like, here's what's pretty easy, is, like, you're, what are they, like, you see people following Jesus, right? You witness change in their life, you witness things going on, it's like impossible grace and impossible peace and impossible joy, and you're like, I know that is true, what is the source of it? And then when someone tells you this is the source of it, you believe the source automatically, because you've seen that is a true thing.
Right.
And so, like, we front load, like, as, like, Scripture should be revered. It is truth. All right? But, like, our understanding that that is the sole means through, like, academic transmission of facts of which God communicates truth to a fallen world is folly. Because otherwise, he could have just dropped the Bible from the heavens. Yes? Like, why does Jesus have to walk the earth? Why does Jesus actually interact with people for 30 years? Why does Jesus actually demonstrate things to people and teach on mountains and do the things that he says he's going to do? You know what's interesting? If you look at the Sermon on the Mount, you can tie Jesus' ministry to the very things that he tells his people to do. Like when he says, like, all those Mercurii parts, like, blessed are, blessed are, blessed are, blessed are those who do this. You can tie those to actions of Jesus' life further on in the Gospel of Matthew as an example. Okay? So, like, we get this impression that, that we just need to transact information with someone when the primary means of which true things are demonstrated, thus communicated, are through the actions of Jesus Christ to the people that interact with, and then a call for his people to do the same thing. And I think what you're running into, or what you're talking about, Boob, is an accurate reflection of, we need to not think that we are failing the communication of good news simply because we're not transacting facts about Jesus Christ. Because the truth is if you are following Jesus and you are taking people with you or doing the things that he otherwise would have done, it will naturally come up. That's the thing. That's the thing. What are you doing here? Why are you such a good listener? Why are you hanging out with me? Well, here's the deal. You know, like, stuff like that actually comes up, but, like, it is, if there's a transaction, it is living out the faith that is true. It kind of makes you think of Yoder, right? You go about your Jesus business. You do the things that you do in your life, and you just take that to wherever God has you going, and that will positively influence the world and communicate good news simply by your actions. And I'm not saying that, your actions should move without foundation in Scripture. What I'm telling you is that what we know about Jesus Christ that Scripture communicates is to be taken out to the world as a light and as a city on a hill, right? And if those things are true, then your actions will otherwise get into it, cause you to, or drive you to the types of conversations that we're always saying, like, we don't know how to have without being awkward. Well, they're awkward because they're being communicated outside of a reality. Like, as opposed to saying, hey, these are the true things about the gospel. These are the things that change your life. These are the things that I know about Jesus Christ. And they can look, and it's completely out of context of the life that you live or the interactions that you've had with someone. And you've written someone off and not actually treated them like a human being, but as a repository for facts that you want to communicate. Yeah, they're going to feel disassociated from the gospel message. That's the thing. So, I think that's entirely true. And I think, like, if we just kind of reoriented our focus and said, look, I am going to live good news. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to live in reaction to the fact that Jesus Christ died for my sins. I can repent of them. And then I find myself in his good graces and under his mercy as I otherwise continue to live my life out with joy and peace and the ability to bring people with me. And, like, if we do that, you will end up buying sandwiches and hearing people's stories and otherwise talking to people who really could use Jesus, because Jesus will make sure that kind of thing goes down. And when we rely on formulaic transactions of information, I think we fundamentally misunderstand the gospel. Because, again, as an example, Jesus could have done things completely different than having to show up and walk the earth, right? But there has to be some sort of substance that says it was important that he do so, and then sends us out to do likewise.
Yeah, I agree.
Get off Boova's lawn.
There's been too much of that.
Mike, did you just stop listening?
What?
Is that what happened? You just kind of stopped listening to the conversation?
No, I was thinking about, I kept thinking about the woman at the well, and I'm like, when Jesus deals with Pharisees, he does. He busts the scripture out and he says, here's the deal. Blankety blank 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 Old Testament jazz. Now, when he's talking with the lady at the well, like, he alludes to the second coming. He says, I am he, you know, but, like, he's not quoting verses. You know what I'm saying? And because they were different conversations, they were different people, and there are different ways to communicate the heart of God, right? Well, and what was going on. And, like, all he did was start out by having a conversation.
Well, yeah, but that conversation included, hey, you got five husbands?
No.
he called her out.
It's still personal.
But agreed, right? Because that's what she needed to hear, you know? And, like, that's the other thing I was thinking about when Boova says, like, you just have a random dude come up and he decided to drop life on you with his big, heavy questions. And, like, I've had that happen a couple times to me over the last couple weeks. And I'm like, sweet Moses, man. You know, don't you have anybody that is qualified to talk to you about this stuff? I mean, that is ridiculously heavy things, you know? And they're like, what do you think? I'm like, I don't know. I can only, and this is where the Jesus counseling comes through. I'm like, do they know Jesus? Because every terrible situation I've ever run into, that is always the answer. I wish I had some great counseling for you, but, like, here's the two biggest things of talking to people about terrible stuff in their life. One, the person that you're mad at, do you understand why they are the way they are? Yes. Well, then I'm not sure why you're not loving them correctly. That's it. They're like, well, they're this way and they're this way. I'm like, why? And they said, because they do these things. Well, so you know why they are the way that they are. You got to love them through that stuff. That's it. There's nothing complicated there.
Right, right. Your surprise is completely unfounded.
Yeah, they're like, I don't understand why they got to be such a terrible person to be around. Like, you know exactly why they're a terrible person to be around. Stop acting crazy like you had no idea where this was coming from.
It has to double suck to be them.
Yeah, you know where it's coming from. And obviously, they're having a terrible time, and that's why they're acting this way. So stop it. And then two, they're like, well, what should my advice be to them? Well, if I were you, do you know Jesus? Well, yes. Well, then go talk to them about Jesus then, because they're putting all their hope in the wrong stuff. And that's it. And you don't have to do it in a cheesy way, and you don't have to do it with a pamphlet, but be like, listen, if you want to hear anything from me, realize that I can only talk from one bucket, and that's my hope is in God, and that's it. That's all I got. I don't have any whiz-bang, got-this-life-figured-out, Jiffy Pop type of stuff. You know, I know Jesus. I follow Jesus. Things are going okay. I have joy, and I have happiness that comes and goes, but I have joy that stays. And that's it. That's all I got.
Yeah, right on. Okay. I think we got this thing straightened out.
Dear, live from the path. Oh boy, I forgot about this one already.
Oh buddy.
Clearly, America is in a state of turmoil.
Oh.
I am horrified and ashamed of the senseless death occurring daily.
Mm-hmm.
I deal with anxiety, particularly regarding fear of death. As a result, the only thing I've found that I can do to cope with current events is to scan headlines and ask my understanding husband for a synopsis of events that doesn't include major triggers. However, I feel serious guilt that I may not be fully educating myself on recent events. Am I wrong to prioritize my mental well-being over the gravity of our country's current situation? I can just tell right by your question that you're heavy and hard to deal with. You know what I'm saying? You've put a lot of thought into this thing.
Yeah, right.
Most people be like, I can't take that kind of stuff, and then just don't read it. Or, I'm really interested in the headlines, and then do read it. I very rarely run into the guy that struggles with, I feel like I should be more informed of the current events, but it's just too much for me.
But I can't take it.
Help me. What do I do?
Here's the thing. It's like, I don't, I'm not sure that you have to be in the know. I mean, there's 300 plus million people in the country. Let's say 300 and, let's say you got a million of them who just aren't in the, they just don't know. They don't know what's going on around. Take most of your Amish, for example.
Yep.
They seem to be doing all right.
Just as a side note, I ran into some Amish folks today at the gas station, and I said hello in a friendly manner, and they didn't reciprocate. And I thought, you people are supposed to be better than this.
Wait, they said hello meanly, or they just didn't say anything?
They didn't say anything. Like, I dead looked them right in the eye. I'm like, morning.
Hey, that's because, do you carry that e-smoker?
No, I didn't have the e-smoker.
They probably know you e-smoke.
You had electricity on you.
You're mocking with it. They, the least you can do is have an analog or two. You're rubbing it in their face.
I had a commercialized soda on me, you know, like I'd bought from the machine. But, I mean, they were at the gas station, so, I mean, the judgment's got to come down.
Wait, were they getting gas?
No, they were pulled up to the front like they were just going to go in and buy convenience items.
Oh, I was going to say, maybe they're an Amish. Maybe they're just hillbillies.
No, it could be just a dude that wears suspenders, a blue shirt and a hat, and a beard and no mustache.
Okay.
I should have
not Amish.
Maybe he's preparing early for Halloween.
Yeah. So, I mean, here's the deal. I don't know, you know, I mean, if you're a politician or like you're working on the UN on behalf of the country or something, I feel like you should keep up with the times. But, you know, past that, you know, do a crossword and stay out the newspaper. I don't think everybody has to know what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, if we're being honest with each other and we're looking, I mean, real honest. Facebook provides maybe 4 to 5% benefit to your life and 95% hassle.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't need to be in the know about that many things, about that many things going on and that many people. But the 5% of the time when you're like, oh, she had a baby, that's cool. But the same is true with the news. Most of that stuff is like, it's just really, there's nothing you're going to do about it. And unless you really need something to talk about at the water cooler, you could pretty much give up on it and be just as happy.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's okay to stay abreast of it, but like, I mean, if you can't handle it, you can't handle it. It's okay to ditch it. Go move out into the country somewhere.
Secular says.
You should be Amish.
Oh, yeah. You can be mean to people at the gas station. Secular says, is that wrong? Absolutely not. According to the Journal of the American Medical Association, 13% of Americans now use antidepressants to combat depression and anxiety. You should use an anti-anxiety medicine instead of just using one for both.
Hey, man, 13% of our country is fighting medication within each other?
Yeah.
Hey, man, wouldn't that be something that would freak someone out who doesn't like hearing about bad news?
Yeah.
Like, hey, holy cats, 13% of our country's in this deal?
Yeah, that's not helpful.
Great job, secular.
Our news media feeds so many salacious details into our homes in the interest of high ratings that it's a miracle the majority of Americans aren't in need of them.
You run a gossip house. Giving out salacious advice to people with legit problems that you profit off of in front of the masses. Shut your hole. Sorry.
Her continued rebuttal is, If you are getting the news you need to know, do not feel guilty for using your husband as a filter. You are only protecting yourself, and that's not wrong. It's healthy.
I don't know about that, but I would just ditch, so I wouldn't make hubby read the headlines anyway. Hold on. I don't like that phrase, search your hole. I wish I hadn't used it.
I agree.
I like mouth better. Sorry.
Dear Life from the Past.
It's Groody.
I need advice. I'm 23 and have been living with my boyfriend of almost 2 years. Where's Dan?
Bad idea.
I have never been in a relationship before this one, so I have little experience. I love him dearly, but every time there's an issue between us, it always becomes my fault, and I'm always the one to apologize. What should I do?
Stop being wrong.
Yeah. You brought this on yourself. If you were right some of the time, this wouldn't keep happening.
You live with a child. Move out.
Yeah, this isn't a great foundation for relationship.
Yeah. It's hey, we moved in together, boyfriend and girlfriend, and he always thinks I'm wrong and never apologizes. I don't know. Maybe you love the idea of loving this dude? Because it sounds like you said this is your first boyfriend? So there's a good chance you don't actually love this guy. You just think you do because he's the first one. And it sounds like he's a real vagabond and a schmuck. Leave him.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of opportunity in this life for people to say that you're wrong all the time. Usually most people get paid money to go there 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
You show up, people say, no, that's dumb and you're dumb. Just do what I tell you. And then you take the money and then you go home and do whatever you want. But you have set up a situation where that happens to you at your job and now at your house. I'm not understanding what's keeping you here. Every time there's a disagreement, it's always because something that you've done and you were wrong about it.
That's not reality. I've met some people that are just dead wrong in life, but they're not wrong all the time.
No.
Like 90% still.
And a loving person wouldn't go back and constantly just call them wrong.
Yeah.
Like they would go, hey, sweetheart, it seems like we're having some issues right now. Let's try and work through them. First off, you need to move out because we're not married.
Yeah. Just across the board. You need to move out.
Secular says, even a stopped clock is right twice a day. You should not be forced into the role of perpetual peacekeeper by accepting the blame for everything, and it won't improve your relationship. Because your boyfriend's preferred method of solving disagreements is laying the blame on you, suggest the two of you get couples counseling.
Oh, man.
However, if he refuses, and he may, you will then have to decide whether it's the way you want to spend the foreseeable future because things aren't likely to change. And, man, counseling is for people that are willing to give it a shot. And so, you can ask him. You can just, you could have a straight-up conversation with him and say, this is what you're doing. And if he goes, crap, you know, I didn't realize I was doing that. I'm wrong. Let's work through this. I know I tend to do this. I've done this my whole life. I need help with it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a fair assessment, right? That happens to people. But if he's just like, yeah, no, then the counseling ain't going to help you. He's just who he is, and you got to go. That's not worth fighting with.
Right.
Yeah, I would agree. Counseling only helps when, like, you both agree to stay in the sack and scratch it out until the thing's resolved. Right? Like, if you're there looking for an out, you don't need to go to counseling. You can just be honest and say you're looking for an out.
Agreed. Here we go. Dear Life from the Path, my sister-in-law, Danny, and my brother have been married almost 3 years. I recently discovered that Danny has created a fake social media page. Holy cats. She posted some nude photos on her and acts like she's single.
Ooh.
I suspect she is getting paid to do live nude video chatting.
Oh, man.
That took a weird turn.
Holy
right there.
Cats.
Man, I didn't see this coming. I'm sorry.
Yeah, man. This
Life
wow.
from the Path, I am shocked over this. I am sure my brother would explode with rage and disappointment if he knew.
Yeah. Sure.
They have two small daughters, which leads me to wonder if she has considered their embarrassment if they ever find out. She's a good person, so I don't know why she would do this. I really need your advice.
Wow.
Hey, you know what? Ask her.
Yeah, are you doing nude Facebook shoots?
Here's the thing. It's like,
pay you to get naked?
Think of the perspective that she's coming from. She's a good person. She's got two young kids. My brother would be furious. Why? Then why did someone do something like that?
There's right? something going on.
Maybe it's something with her. Maybe it's just she had an emotional issue. Maybe it's coming from something in her past. Maybe things aren't great in their marriage and maybe they got money problems, right? Like either way, like regardless if everything else she says is true or at least perceived to be true, something's up. So let's note that you should not open separate lying social media accounts and post nude photos of yourself. Okay. I think we got that as a ground rule. It's not a good idea.
How do you suspect she is getting paid to do live nude video chatting? Either she's doing live nude video chatting or she is not.
That's a really big jump to make if you're not certain that person's doing exactly that. Like, oh yeah, she has a separate Facebook account. That automatically means someone is doing live nude chat.
See, here's the deal: is that actually it changes a lot for me whether you're just kind of like posting nudies of yourself somewhere for Joyce, or like you're making money on it. Like,
yeah, you've turned this into a profession.
But like, why? Why would someone want to do that? So that's what I'm saying is like, I think we're all agreed that it's not a good idea to post the nudes, right? So now we'll get to the brass tacks of it. Somebody you know and care for is for some reason posting nudies of themselves and doing webcam videos. Why should you check it out?
Yeah.
That seems like the perfect place to be like, hey man, why are you doing that stuff?
Yeah, what's going on here? This seems, there's trouble afoot.
Yeah, something that, it's just not a normal response to life. Like, I don't run out of gas in my car one week and then like the next day decide to put nudies of myself on the net. Like, something's going on. So yeah, the perfect opportunity to follow up with somebody.
Secular says, it's time to talk to Danny.
Yeah.
Tell her what you've learned and ask her why she's doing it. No, okay, Aces. When you do, ask how she thinks your brother will act when he finds out. Okay, now you're bringing the guilt train. Why don't you just figure out what's going on first?
Yeah, start with, hey, what's going on?
Ask her how she thinks your brother will react when he finds out, if he doesn't already know, and how this could affect their daughters. This may be a fling, a way to prove to herself that she's still attractive, or a way to earn needed money. But you will never know until you initiate a conversation with her.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
Hey, man, if you're a husband, and, like, you and your family need money, and you don't have, like, three jobs, but you've made your lady go out and start selling, like, that deal. Oh, buddy. You need to start looking back at yourself and then saying you're a fool. And go out and get a third job to get some more money. Or take down your lifestyle and go move into somebody's basement.
No, oh, yeah, that's good.
Touché, Booba. All right, let's do one more, and then you can do a quiz.
And then we can do a quiz, yeah.
All right.
Oh, buddy.
Dear Life from the Past. During my wedding reception a month ago, one of the guests, a friend of my mom's, poured a glass of water on the DJ's laptop because he felt the music was too loud and he wanted it shut down. My husband was furious and asked the guest to leave. The incident was blamed on too much alcohol and it ruined the rest of the evening. Many guests were upset and left. Now, hold on. I don't want to stop the whole train here, but like, if I saw a man pour water on a laptop, I wouldn't say, that's it, this party's gotten out of hand, and then go home.
No more music, looks like I don't feel to be here anymore.
Yeah, this is ridiculous.
I mean, like, Leon has gotten out of hand.
The man ended up paying the DJ to replace the laptop and sent us a note of apology for his behavior. My question is, must we send a thank you note to him and his wife for the wedding gift they gave us?
Ah, I love social.
What the man did was unforgivable. In many ways, he spoiled our day. Mom thinks I should, quote, do the right thing and thank him for the gift. It wasn't his wife's fault, so I'm thinking of addressing the note to her only.
Yes! Oh, I was waiting for that. Yes!
Vindictive.
Is that okay?
Hey, man, first of all, it didn't ruin your wedding.
No, it didn't.
It's a story. Your reception was lame. No one will ever remember your reception except for the fact that Leon poured water on the DJ's
laptop. Hey, man, you remember
computer?
When Leon poured the water on the DJ's laptop? Yeah! Hey, congratulations on your 20 years.
Yeah, like, here's the thing. It's, I don't know, maybe this has changed in people's lives, but, like, no one ever throws a party, like a wedding reception, where, like, that was killer. It's the reception at all receptions. Most people have 5 to 6 friends, at least, that have gone to a wedding over the last 10 years, and, like, I can't tell you the bits and pieces of any one of them.
Yeah.
Right? They just aren't fantastic. They do the thing that they're supposed to do, and then they go away. But, like, you've got a story that you remember forever about that guy that jacked with the laptop, and that's funny. And so, I would send him a thank you card, because he made it right with the DJ, and I would thank him for the gift and said, P.S., man, thanks for the story.
Yeah, thanks for the memories.
We'll remember that always. Love you, Leon.
Yeah.
Hey, Leon, maybe you shouldn't drink the whole bottle next time, but we really do appreciate the memory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the toaster.
He made it right, and he apologized. Like, what else do you want him to do?
Yeah, if he would have just been like, oh, this was his fault, and then never went back and paid for it, I'd have been like, hey, this guy's just a regular curmudgeon. But,
yeah.
Like, he seems to have realized his folly and went back and paid the DJ and apologized and then got you a toaster. So, thank him.
Thank him.
Yeah, it's weird to see people try to dole out karma justice. You know, on their own. Well, like, you know, you made a big mistake at my wedding, and I'm not going to thank you for that gift. Yeah, okay, what are you, 7? You know what I'm saying? Just the man brought you
like
a gift.
10 years later, Leon's still seething. Oh, they never sent me that thank you note. Like, I get it. I dumped that water on the DJ's computer, but still.
You have invested way too much effect in your thank you note.
Right.
Like, he's just sitting at his house pining, and when it doesn't show up, he's crushed, and he's like, oh, I'm gonna, and then he gets a bigger glass of water this time, and then finds more laptops.
It's gonna be a desktop this time.
He only knows one way to lash back, and he just pours water on stuff, and that's him.
The music's too loud, I didn't get a thank you note.
People, man, they just do this all the time. You can only control what you can control.
Yeah.
Someone gave you a gift, just say thank you. What if that? What, I mean, how many people do you know? They're just straight up jerks, right? But they did something nice for you once. You know, your aunt is terrible to your mom, and you know it. They get they fight, and they don't get along. And she says mean things every Christmas, but she got you a birthday gift. She got you a gift. Say thank you. That's it. You know, I mean, you don't have to deal out your own third party justice everywhere that you go.
Right, right. Your job isn't to find any opportunity you can to squeeze the needle a little bit. Like,
yeah.
hey, this guy mistreated your friend one time, and they said this thing, and you're going to pay them back by, I don't know, moving their mail into the neighbor's mailbox or something. So there's like something you control, and you're like, you know, it's not your job, right? Handle your life is simplified, Jesus follower. Just handle things the right way. Like you're right. Your job isn't to dispense karma or individual justice. Your job is just to handle things the way that you're supposed to handle things, and let God kind of handle it.
Yeah. So he gave you a gift. You send the note and say thanks for the gift. Right? And don't bring up the laptop thing. It's good. It's done. It was between him and the DJ, and you're like, it ruined my day. Well, we've been through that. It did not. Your reception was probably lame anyway. Let's see. Secular says, I know of no rule of etiquette that forbids addressing the note only to her. However, when you write the note, word it this way. We want to thank you and John for the gift, and we'll think of you when we use it. That way you will have thanked them for it, and your manners will be above reproach. And if you prefer to avoid them in the future, you'll get no argument from me.
Hey, that's just go back and think about each person as you use their gift? No. I feel like that's just lying.
Like,
every time I use this blender, Gene, I really appreciate this smoothie, and you.
That's so terrible. I can't remember anything anybody got me for my wedding.
Yeah, that's normal.
None of it.
Hey, man, a friend of ours gave, I remember this, actually, I thought of this 2 days ago, somebody got some crock pot. And we've been married, I don't know, 11 years, 12, something like that. And I thought, hey, man, this crock pot's been pretty handy. Bless whoever got us his crock pot.
Right, but you don't remember the individual person.
No, I'm pretty sure I know who it is.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're weird, though.
Because I thought it was an interesting gift from that particular group of people as to why they got me a crock pot.
Were they Amish?
Yeah.
Because that'd be really weird. Hey, we can't use this, but you sure can. Enjoy your beef stew.
That's a cool way to live.
It was just like, they were the parents of a friend. Like, it was a real peripheral group of people, and I thought, hey, man, a crock pot's a pretty hefty gift. Like,
that's
it wasn't expensive, but it's like, I mean, it changes your life.
It's useful forever.
Yeah. We crock and we pot with it, and like, we've been doing it for years, and it's been fantastic. All right. Alright, you guys want to do a quick quiz?
Yeah, quick quiz.
Sure.
So, I can't remember. Did we do the Job quiz? I feel like we did.
The Job quiz?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, alright. So here we go. Let's try out Job.
Okay.
Alright, so this is, see if you can best, lie from the path on this quiz about Job. Here we go. In what land did Job live?
Uz.
We're in with Uz. Okay. Two, how many children did Job lose in a storm?
12.
6, 8, 10, or 12?
12.
Yeah, okay, I agree with that. What kind of disease struck Job? Leprosy, blindness, madness, boils.
Boils.
Boils, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, boils, yeah. Who told Job in his troubles to curse God and die?
His wife.
His wife does that, yeah. Yeah, there we go.
The shady lady.
Who attempted to comfort Job in his distress? His wife, his friends, God, or no one?
His friends.
Yeah, his friends did. Which of these was not one of Job's friends? So far, Bildad, Elihu or Eliphaz?
The first one.
No, it's Elihu. It's Elihu.
It's
Zophar, Bildad, and Eliphaz. I think it's Elihu that's not one of the friends.
I agree. I know Zophar and Bildad are.
And I know Eliphaz is, so it's Elihu.
Okay, all right. I thought Zophar was the younger guy.
I think Zophar is that thing in the movie Big that hands out the stuff.
That's Zoltar or something like that.
Hey, so you don't know specifically. It could be Zophar. 7.
Fair enough.
Job's friends kept vigil with him in silence for how long?
3 days.
24 hours, 3 days, 7 days, 40 days.
3 days.
Hey, man, life from the past knows Job.
Yeah.
Potentially. 8. Job opened his mouth and cursed the day. Then what did he wish? That he could die, that he could sleep, that he had never been born, that he could be healed.
Yeah, never been born.
9. How many sons and daughters were born to Job after his suffering? 5 sons and 3 daughters. 7 sons and 3 daughters. 3 sons and $5, 10 sons and $10.
I think 7 sons and 3 daughters.
10 and 10.
Yeah, because it's more. I think it was more than what he had before.
And
that's the only one that's
that makes
more.
Sense. Yep. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
10. How much longer did Job live after his sufferings? 85 years, 100 years, 120 years, 140 years.
I want to say 120. Man, we're gonna.
I'm going between 100 and 120, so I'll go 120.
Okay, I can get on board with 120. All I feel like you remember 100.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think it's either 85 or 120. We'll see. All right, here we go. Let's see what happens, boys. Number one, in what land did Job live? We said Uz. That is correct. Number two, how many children did Job lose in a storm? We said 12. That is incorrect. The correct answer is 10.
Dang it.
Uh-oh.
Well, what we've not done well.
Oh, no.
What kind you seemed confident.
What kind of disease struck Job? We said boils. That is correct.
Yep.
Who told Job in his troubles to curse God and die? We said that's his wife. That is correct. Who attempted to comfort Job in his distress? We said his friends. That is correct. Six, which of these was not one of Job's friends? We said Elihu, and that is correct.
Okay.
Seven, Job's friends kept vigil with him in silence for how long? We said 3 days. That is incorrect. It was 7 days.
Dang it.
What?
Question eight, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day. Then what did he wish? We said that he had never been born. That answer is correct. Number nine, how many sons and daughters were born to Job after his suffering? We said 10 sons and 10 daughters. That is incorrect. The correct answer is 7 sons and 3 daughters.
Yep. Nicely
courtesy
done,
Bova. And question 10, how much longer did Job live after his sufferings? We said 120 years, and we cut God short. The answer is incorrect. That is 140 years.
Oh, wow. All right.
I guess we'd be reading Job this week.
Answered a total of 6 questions. We got 60%. The quiz has been taken 115,000 times. The average score for that quiz is 64%.
What?
We have been...
We are below the bar on Job?
Outdone on Job, boys.
This can't stand.
That's a shame.
This cannot stand.
It is a shame.
I'm going to come up with a more difficult one on Job
I'll
and then
Job
get it all
week.
Right.
yeah. Yeah, okay. Already want to do one
and
more?
Not just the last three chapters, Mike.
No, I'll do the whole thing. So far. Oh, yeah, let's do one more. Then we got to go.
Okay. Hold on. Let's do... Oh, we've done donkeys, haven't we?
Yeah. We've done donkeys, we've done clouds, we've done ships.
Let's do James and John. Okay. Oh, wait, no, here. What's one where people do terrible? Let's see if we can do better than terrible. How about Titus?
Oh, man.
Here we go.
A quiz on Titus?
What nationality was Titus? Greek? Roman, Hebrew, Syrian. So yeah. Titus is the guy where they had to cut the skin, right? They had to he circumcised him.
He chose to be.
Yeah, so he's
Greek.
Not so he's not Hebrew.
I was going to say
Greek.
That's Greek.
Yep. When Paul went to Troas to preach and Titus was not there, he had no rest in his spirit and went from there to Galatia, Macedonia, Thessalonica, or Ithaca.
Thessalonica.
Troas.
Ben.
What do we think?
I don't know.
I'm leaning towards Macedonia.
Me too.
All right. Yes. We'll go Macedonia.
You guys are pitiful. Three. Paul was comforted by the coming of... This is about Paul. Paul was comforted by the coming of Titus to Macedonia.
Yes.
Hey. And also because the Corinthians longed for Paul, were deeply sorrowful for Paul, had ardent concern for Paul, all of the above.
Probably all of the above.
Longed for him, sorrowful, concern. Yeah, okay. It was all of the above. In his second letter to the Corinthians, Paul told them that his desire for Titus was that he return to Troas with him and finish the work that Paul had started there, that he return to Corinth and finish the work that he had started there, that he journey to Macedonia with Paul, feeling confident on this Macedonia answer.
It seems right.
Four, that he should be put out of the church until he repented.
Oh, four is a definite no.
Yikes. I mean, the man lost part of his penis for this thing. I feel like he's still in.
Get out of the church.
So it's
I say Corinth.
Return to Troas, return to Corinth. He writes to the Corinthians. So if the only reason you would say that to the Corinthians is because Titus was in Corinth. Right? You return to Troas with him, finish the word of the post. I don't know. I don't know the right answer.
Let's go with Macedonia. It hasn't let us down yet.
We don't know that it hasn't let us down yet.
Shut up, boo.
Number five.
We'll see.
Who were the two other men that traveled to Corinth with Titus? Hey, man, should we say that he returned to Corinth then? For the previous one?
He's already in Corinth. That's why Paul's writing him a letter.
No, maybe he's going to send him to Corinth.
Yeah.
We're moving it. Right. Five, who were the two other men that traveled to Corinth with Titus? They are not named. Barnabas and Silas, Mark and Luke, Apollos and Cephas.
I say Apollos and Cephas.
No,
I'm not. That's Barnabas and Silas.
Yeah, Barnabas and Silas.
Okay. Number six, how did Paul describe Titus to the Corinthians? The messenger of the churches and the glory of Christ. Our dear fellow servant who is for you a faithful minister of Christ. He is my partner and fellow helper concerning you. A faithful minister and fellow servant in the Lord.
That sounds like all stuff, two. He would say.
I would say he's my partner and fellow helper concerning you.
Yeah, okay. He would say all that stuff.
Yeah.
That does sound like an opening from Paul.
Shoot. Paul,
hey, man, this is totally a Paul quiz.
We're in some trouble. Paul told the... We're getting whooped on Titus. Paul told the Corinthians that both he and Titus had done all things for a reason. Why? For the establishment of the kingdom on earth, so that you will know the love of money is the root of all evil, for your edifying, to make known to you the mystery of Christ in you, the hope of glory.
It's either C or D.
Yeah, I would agree. It's either C or D. This is for your edification.
I say D.
For your edification?
Yeah.
You think so? Okay.
I'm going to hold a tentative Buva says hope of glory, if possible.
I say D.
See, wait on his vindication. Eight, in his letter to the Galatians, Paul told them that he went to Jerusalem with Titus and John Mark, Silas, Luke, Barnabas.
Went to Jerusalem?
Yeah, he went Barnabas, right?
Yeah, Barnabas was Jerusalem.
Is that the original? Did the Titus went with him the first time he went to Jerusalem? Were they, like, accepted him?
Wait.
No, yeah, it was Barnabas.
Let's keep it.
Yeah, he returned back.
Wordy on the downward trajectory here. In his letter to the Galatians, what was the issue that Paul used Titus to illustrate? The miraculous provision of God for the believer, the necessity to tithe, freedom from the need to be circumcised, the judgment of God on the unfaithful.
Circumcision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Paul's second letter to Timothy, what did he say had happened to Titus? Titus had forsaken Paul because he loved the present world. Titus had been imprisoned for preaching the gospel. Titus had gone back to his hometown as John Mark had. Titus had gone to Dalmatia.
It's either A or D. Not.
I don't think he's forsaken Paul.
No, sorry. I mean, what was it? B?
B? Imprisoned B. Or gone to Dalmatia?
Yeah.
Let's do Dalmatia.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, man, boys. I think this is going to be rough.
How
would you? Wait a minute. What nationality was Titus? We said Greek. That is correct.
Yes.
Question two. When Paul went to Troas to preach and Titus was not there, he had no rest in his spirit and went from there to, we said, Macedonia. That is correct.
Okay.
Paul was comforted by the coming of Titus to Macedonia and also because the Corinthians, blah, blah, all of the above, we had said, and that is correct.
Yes.
Question four. In his second letter to the Corinthians, Paul told them that his desire for Titus was... We said that he returned to Corinth and finished the work that he had started there. That is correct.
Yep.
Number five, who were the two other men that traveled to Corinth with Titus? We said Barnabas and Silas. That is incorrect. They are not named.
Well, so it could have been Barnabas and Silas.
Yeah. Half a point.
Yep.
Number six, how did Paul describe Titus to the Corinthians? We said he is my partner and fellow helper concerning you. That is correct. Question seven, Paul told the Corinthians that both he and Titus had done all things for a reason. We said for your edification. That is correct.
All right.
Question 8. In his letter to the Galatians, Paul told them that he went to Jerusalem with Titus and, we said, Barnabas. That is correct. Yep. Question 9. In his letter to the Galatians, what was the issue that Paul used Titus to illustrate? We said, losing skin on a wang doodle, and that is correct.
Losing skin.
Question 10. In Paul's second letter to Timothy, what did he say had happened to Titus? We said Titus had gone to Dalmatia. That is correct. We answered
well done,
a total
boys.
9 out of 10 questions correctly
yeah.
for a score of 90%. That quiz had been taken 6,623 times since December of 2004 for an average score of 41%.
Man. Hey, man, that was a quiz about Paul, and, hey, Titus was there, too.
Yeah. Hey, but who would have guessed that? We rocked the Titus quiz and got our bones handed to us on the Job quiz.
You know the world ain't right
now. We know
now.
New Testament.
Something's not, yeah, something's not good. All right, anyway, that's, what are we doing on here? Hold on a second. Mike, say something positive for people.
You're listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org. Listen, if you'd like to give money to us, that's cool. We have a PayPal account set up, right, Ben?
Yeah, hey, we actually do, yeah.
We do?
Live from the Path, yeah.
No doubt.
info@livefromthepath.org. You can PayPal us money.
Hey, man, the Lord's calling you to give us money.
Send some over.
I'm almost certain he's not.
He's not.
No,
most likely.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. He's probably not calling you to do so, but, like, if you're certain and, like, you've Gideon this, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that sounds good. Hey, you've been listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. Make sure you check out the website, livefromthepath.org. Hey, go out there and do a search for Ted Yoder. There's some Ted Yoder clips out there rocking the web, and you can enjoy that. And search Facebook. Go ahead and like him on Facebook. Follow him on all the social medias and dig on what Ted is doing. Thanks for hanging out with us. We will see you next week. And in the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.